Okay, after that long break, welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow, the definitive radio program devoted to the study of emerging science and nanotechnology. And in this half hour, we have Jim Hussey of Nano Inc. back on the line with us again. He's going to talk about all the exciting advances that are going on with stem cell research and other things. Plus, you'll hear more tiny tech jobs, and we're going to visit the Den of Strangers. And finally, the ever-popular Voice of Reason, all coming up in just a minute. Ready for web hosting with a different approach, like great customer care for a change? ComCenterNet Services' reputation is built worldwide on establishing a personal relationship with each client. And when it's imperative that your website is never down, you can trust ComCenter. Redundant internet connections powered 24/7 with full-time battery and tape backup systems, all for about a dollar a day. Call 972-221-9566. That's 972-221-9566.
TSDC in the laser department is known worldwide.
Our laser electro-optics program was the first in the nation. We've been doing this for 35 years. Our nanotechnology lab is a $450,000 class 100 clean room.
You get to deal with the high-powered lasers, and then after we do our labs, we get to play with them.
We have a 99% job placement rate. A lot of our students actually have jobs before they ever even graduate.
It's going to change the world. It truly is.
Today, our guest is Jim Hussey, CEO of Nano Inc.
What we need in this country, according to the Nanotech National Initiative, we need a couple million nanotechnologists in the next 6 or 7 years, and we're going to hopefully help train those people how to do that.
As soon as we can talk about that, I'd like to. But in the meantime, do you want to move on and talk about the nano stem cells that your company is working with?
Yeah, we were approached by a university, which we're in the process of announcing, in the UK, one of the tissue engineering centers. They had, and we have sold nanofabrication machines currently around the world. In fact, I think every continent of the world, there's 70 or 80 machines around the world. I think every continent in the world, maybe with the exception of Antarctica, has a machine right now on it. And these are typically government authorities, government entities, as well as big research centers. And one of those research centers had collaborated with some stem cell scientists, and what they discovered was is that you could create nanobiochips, which could control adult stem cell growth. Well, one of the challenges in stem cells isn't that we can't find them. We know where they are. They're all over our body. It's not that we can't synthesize them. We certainly can and get them out of the tissue and out of the blood. The problem we have is controlling them, and part of that is one of the things we're finding is that stem cells and cells in general don't just communicate chemically. They also communicate by surface structure and things of that nature. And so what's happened now is you need to create structures at the nanoscale, fabricate nanostructures and with a chemistry that basically can control these cells. Because one of the problems they're having is controlling the cell's trajectory in terms of what kind of cell does that stem cell become. And that's a real interesting phenomenon, is that they can control stem cell differentiation and growth by using a combination of not only chemistry, but also structure. So you build chemical structures on the side of cell, which mimics what the actual cell has. And that's been of course, you can't direct write like our product does, except in the nanoscale, except with our product. So that's what got them interested in using our technology, and that's what they've discovered.
So then let me see if I can break this down a little bit and understand. You're talking about the structure of the stem cell that you can use your nanolithography dip pen method to get in and change the structure and then guide the stem cell to grow to become whatever sort of an organ or whatever we want it to be. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, a little different. Just what happens is that stem cells differentiate, or cells differentiate by touching each other. So you can create a synthetic surface which basically mimics cellular communication. So if you imagine the way stem cell differentiation is, the cells floating in the body, it goes up to a mature cell, a liver cell, for example. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, the first thing the stem cell does, Colonel, is it touches the other cell. Now, for a long time, people were wondering, why does it touch it? Well, maybe it had to chemically communicate, whatever. nobody had thought about till recently, in the last year or so, that maybe it's touching and it's getting chemical communication, but maybe it's getting physical communication, like Braille, like a blind person reading Braille, that the cell not only has to get a chemical signal, but like Braille, it has to get a structural signal on the surface.
Such as the contour of the surface? I mean, really?
Contour of the surface, just like reading Braille. So if you think about the cell's touching to pick up the chemistry of the other cell, and then the contour of the other cell. And that touching, because it's interesting, once the stem cell touches the mature cell, the liver cell, for example, it never stops touching it. It stays there forever. That's why we have organized organs in our body. That's why we have hearts that are distinct from livers, that are distinct from stomachs, that are distinct from lungs, is that once that touching occurs, they don't detach.
Well, then what you're saying is that it isn't chemistry then, it's actually frequency. I mean, that would have to be the communication. Is that what we're talking?
But maybe both. And maybe both chemistry and, like Braille, structure. So what happens is that the cell, of course, being more complex than, you know, we probably fully understand, mm-hmm. is telling us that it not only sees chemistry when it changes and when it starts to create, you know, to morph into this mature cell, but it sees the physical structure of the cell that it's touching.
Jim Hussey returns right after this break. Okay, we're back on The Promise of Tomorrow, the definitive program on nanotechnology and emerging science. So glad to be with you. Before we get back to today's guest, however, we need to check in again with Pam Bailey because she has tiny tech jobs. What do you have, Pam?
Well, I have here a senior research engineer in the area of biosensors for the Institute of Microelectronics in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
This position deals with the development of a silicon-based biosensor technology for point-of-care diagnostics. And every time I read this, I think of that handheld device that they used in Star Trek, the Dr. Beverly Crusher used.
Yeah.
More specifically, the technology targets a silicon-based nanowire biosensor for electronic detection of charged biomolecules such as nucleic acids and proteins. So the key responsibility of this position will be surface functionalization and experimental characterization of biosensors. The position requires a PhD in surface chemistry or physics and some experience in biosensors for nucleic acids and protein and in surface chemistry protocols. The person that's hired will need hands-on skills in device functionalization and characterization and knowledge of silicon-based microfabrication, MEMS, and or microfluidics, and also device physics would be an advantage.
And as we study more about microfluidics, we become more and more fascinated with the potentials there. Tell us a little bit about the bioelectronics program at IAME.
Well, the Institute of Microelectronics Bioelectronics R&D efforts explore the use of CMOS and silicon-based nanotechnology to build nanoscale sensors and sample-to-answer microsystems for biomedical research and applications.
Mm-hmm.
And by sample-to-answer, I mean low-power and small-size microsystems that take samples and yield immediate results, like the Star Trek device. For example, manufacturable, reproducible biochips and fluidic microsystems for biomedical research and applications such as clinical diagnostics and drug discovery. So they would be like faster clinical diagnostic tests, maybe tests that could be run in a doctor's office immediately without being sent to a clinical lab, or aids in basic research in, say, a biotech or a pharmaceutical environment.
I appreciate you explaining that sample to answer. That had me going for a little bit. And for more information on this and other Tiny Tech Jobs, it's tinytechjobs.com. We'll check in with you one more time before the end of the program, Pam. Thanks.
Okay.
Right now, I want you to walk with me for just a minute while I take you to my den of strangers. Okay, we're at the door. Now we have to open it very slowly to see who we're going to meet today inside the den of strangers. Here in my den of strangers, through the wonders of nanotechnology, or more precisely, the illusions of radio, we're able to capture wisdom from the past. Now, what surprise person from the past shall we meet today?
H.L. Mencken brings this wisdom. Knowledge is not only power, it is also courage.
Today, our guest is Jim Hussey, CEO of Nano Inc. Well, then what you're saying is that it isn't chemistry then, it's actually frequency. I mean, that would have to be the communication. Is that what we're talking?
It may be both. It may be both chemistry and, like, braille structure. Well, that has enormous implications in biology.
Wow, I guess.
Because in biology, we've always assumed that cellular communication was chemical.
Mm-hmm.
We communicate at one cell, send a message to another cell by chemistry. But what if, what we're learning now is that cells, of course, in our body touch each other. That's why, we're not a floating bag of water. We have structures in our body. They're solid, right? There's a semi-solid or solid part of us. Well, that solid is a series of surfaces. Well, so maybe the way the cells are designed is to not only touch our cells and communicate chemically, but by this structure. So the cell walks up, it sees the chemistry, but it first touches the other cell and says, oh, you're a liver cell. And then it starts all of its changing and transformation by that touching. So it's not just physical, it's not just chemistry, it's both. And that's been a big difference, is we've never been able to create structures of that size so that we could, in a synthetic way, reproduce what's happening in the body.
Well, these things are just absolutely fascinating to me. It's whole new worlds that I hadn't thought of before at all with stem cell. And let me ask you, lifting the restrictions on stem cell research, is this going to cause more of a demand for your equipment to be able to do these things?
Well, you have to understand that, interestingly, we as a company only work with adult cells, and the reason being is that they're more commercially viable.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with embryonic stem cells, which anybody who works in the field will tell you, is you really can't use them in humans, and there's a reason for that. First of all, none of us can go back and get our own embryonic cells, right? They're long gone, so you're going to have tissue rejection problems.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem is that stem cells, embryonic stem cells, are tumorigenic. They actually cause cellular division that's abnormal. Now, in the normal development of an embryo, there's enough control in the womb, and there's enough chemical control and physical control in the womb to keep that all on the straight path. But when those are outside the womb, they don't act the same way. So what most people are doing now in the stem cell area has really moved on to adult cells.
Jim Hussey will return in a minute with more exciting updates on stem cell research. We're on the line with Jim Hussey, CEO of Nano Inc., talking about stem cell research.
Most people are doing now in the stem cell area has really moved on to adult cells, which are adult mesenchymal or adult hematopoietic cells, or the new cells that have been recently discovered, where we take adult cells and make them a little more pluripotent, which means a little more able to form other things. And those are called induced pluripotent cells. And the reason we want to control the pluripotency is that, unlike embryonic stem cells, which are wildly pluripotent, they'll become anything, Carl. I mean, if you put a stem cell in with literally anything, it will become those cells.
Wow.
That's a problem when you try to do anything. So our company's never been involved with embryonic stem cells. They just aren't going to be feasible. In fact, one of the major, even it was interesting when the president had signed that executive order, one of the major promoters of embryonic stem cells had said to me, he said, you know, as a practical matter, he says, we're never going to use them anywhere but the lab. And I looked at him and I said, that's correct. I mean, that's really the only place you'd ever use them.
And all this brouhaha all these years about not being able to have embryonic stem cell studies was really for nothing, because that's all they're going to be used for anyway.
Yeah, I think it was interesting because we have a collaboration in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have said, or what the Europeans have said to us, has been that it was a rabbit hole. It was, you know, the embryonics were never going to be practical. People in Europe had moved on, you know, several years ago to adult cells, because the way this should work, Colonel, is that everybody carries their own toolbox. So if we can, for example, recruit your adult cells, we'll take them from skin or from gum or from blood or wherever, we then differentiate those into the tissue we want and then give it back, not to your neighbor, but to you.
Mm-hmm.
You would give it back to you. So the real way this will work as a practical matter is we will recruit your cells. We will then differentiate them into whatever we want them to be and need you to have them be. So whether it be a new heart or a new, you know, bone, a new cartilage, whatever it would be, but then put it back in your body. then you have no tissue rejection, you have no tumorigenicity, you're getting, you know, there's no chance of you getting unfriendly DNA, and there's no chance of viral introduction, because it's you. I mean, it's you, it's transformed, it's put back into you. That will likely pass through the FDA. Anything else is really problematic from a safety standpoint. There was a story in the just recently of an Israeli boy who had a genetic disorder, and his parents, in desperation, I'm sure, took him to Russia, and the young man, he was 13 years old, got intravenous injections of embryonic stem cells, and within a relatively short time, about 18 months, he has developed tumors all over his brain stem and spinal cord, which we could have predicted based on the animal studies, because again, embryonic cells are meant to be in the embryo and probably, or in the womb, and probably nowhere else. So anywhere else is probably not going to pass regulatory muster, and it's not going to be very practical.
Well, what about all this talk about the placenta cells helping to generate new spinal cord, in spinal cord injuries and that sort of thing? I thought there was a lot of hope for that.
Well, I think the answer is, and it's interesting because even the president, when he was talking about all this, he said that, you know, he's going to follow the science, which I believe is the right way to go. And what you'll find is that what we thought we needed to do with embryonic cells or placental cells, there's going to be a lot of other cells in the body that are going to be able to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. We just didn't understand the communication language of the cell. And so the more we understand this, how the cell communicates, the more we're going to be able to take cells that are naturally there. There are neural stem cells that are all over our brain CNS system right now. We should take some of those, convert them into whatever we want, and then put them back. So it would be more of helping what's already there. But anything else, you know, for example, putting embryonic stem cells, there's a trial that's about to start. There's a huge amount of worry. They're going to only be allowed, the company, to treat one patient at a time. They're going to have to pre-treat them with cancer drugs, some other drugs as well, to suppress their immune system. And they're going to make them, I think, treat one patient, and they're going to wait a long time and see if they develop these tumors. And these are patients with spinal cord injury. So I'm not sure those will ever be very practical.
Jim, this whole stem cell thing is such an interesting topic that we could make an entire program on its own on that, and I hope you and I can visit that again sometime again, but right now we're out of time. But Jim Hussey, president of Nano Inc., a leader in dip pen nanolithography, has promised to come back in future programs and talk about their bio nano discovery and nano fabrication systems. We'll look forward to that. Still to come, the voice of reason, but right now, Pam Bailey has a final tiny tech job for us before closing. What do you have this time, Pam?
Well, there's a postdoctoral position that's available immediately at the Old Dominion University Research Foundation in Norfolk, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
So this person will be responsible for the synthesis of size and shape selected metal and metal oxide nanoparticles stabilized by tailor-made surfactants for various applications. And those applications would include catalysis and sensing. Individuals with expertise in either nano or organic material synthesis are preferred, but they will consider applicants with synthetic organic chemistry background.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about Old Dominion? I mean, we've talked about them before, but somebody that's just tuned in would like to explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, they're a separate, private, not-for-profit corporation, so they're not really a university. It's more like a research foundation.
Okay.
And they serve as the agent for sponsored research and other projects that are conducted by the actual university. So the foundation's purpose is to promote the educational objectives of Old Dominion University by encouraging, advancing, fostering, and conducting research in engineering, the physical and life sciences, the humanities, education, and, you know, all kinds of other branches of learning.
All right. As always, Pam Bailey, you're so enlightening, and we look forward to your tiny tech job so much, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
See you then.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
It's very important to remember that science can answer the questions. It may not always be the answer we had hoped for, but science, or the one that we had believed before. But science can help us answer these questions, and that's why we're here. We're hoping to clear the way. We're hoping to increase understanding, not to muddy the water, and that's really our goal as scientists. Dr. Spencer Williams, I'm a consultant for ChemRisk. I'm a health scientist in Texas.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at thepromiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next weekend at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.